Greetings again in the name of Jesus. It's good to see all of you here, and welcome. I see a few faces that I haven't seen before. Welcome. And it's possible that I just missed you before, but I'm pretty sure I see a few people that haven't been here before. You know if you've been or not, so you might know if I'm right or wrong. This song that we sang, the last song, number 310, is a song. I grew up with this hymnal, but and I've seen this song. I don't think, to my knowledge, I've ever sung it. It's a beautiful song. The words are just very, very. The dead center of truth there. Thou spotless Lamb of God, on thee for help I lean. I know thy precious blood has power to make me clean. Oh, take my burdened heart and wash away its sin, thy righteousness impart, and make me pure within. And then the last part of the last verse, the last words, and thou art all I need. Do you know that when we get to the place where Christ is all we have, we discover that he is all we need, and life can go from there. We'd like to, I'm just curious tonight. I've noticed that this church is a middle-aged church, lots of children. That's wonderful. I've really been blessed by the children. But I'm curious about the youth as well. I just wonder how many here are here between the ages of 14 and 20. Would you mind raising your hands if you're here between the ages of 14 and 20? I'm just kind of curious as to what kind of crowd we have here. The title of the message tonight is Rejoice, Old Man, in Your Youth. And I'm going to explain the title a little bit. Obviously it's to the old men or older men. I'm not addressing this to the youth. I'm addressing it to those who are not youth. And it's not talking about your youthfulness, your own youthfulness, but to the youth. Rejoice, old men or middle-aged men and women, in your youth, the youth that you have here. And so those of you who raised your hands, we're not going to be talking so much to you as about you, so you're dismissed. You can go. No, you can't. You don't have to, at least. You're welcome to stay. But just to explain, we're going to be talking more about you than to you, so I hope your ears don't burn or anything like that. I don't think they will, but just stay with us here. So there's quite a few youth here, and I'm sure that all of us understand that youth is a very important time of life where decisions are being made that will have lifetime effects. It's like a little bit like shooting an arrow. You're aiming the arrow, you're releasing it, and the direction is going to be set in a lot of ways. And so those decisions that you make today are going to have a lot of effects on you and on very likely on the lives of many other people. We also understand that youth can be and is really a very vulnerable time with lots of pressures and lots of influences and lots of voices calling. In the book of Proverbs, I'd like to read two passages from the book of Proverbs tonight to illustrate those two voices that are calling. Proverbs chapter 8, verse 1. A little bit, we'll read, I'll read from verses, chapter 8, verses 1 to 11. Doth not wisdom cry? So here we have the call of God. Wisdom is crying out, and understanding put forth her voice. She standeth at the top of high places by the way and the places of the paths. She crieth at the gates, at the entry of the city, at the coming of the door. Unto you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of men. O ye simple, O ye simple, understand wisdom, and ye fools, be ye of an understanding heart. Hear, for I will speak of excellent things, and the opening of my lips shall be right things. For my mouth shall speak truth, and right in wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing forward or perverse in them. They are all plain to him that understandeth, and the right to them that find knowledge. Receive my instruction and not silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is better than rubies, and all things that may be desired are not to be compared with her. So here, it doesn't say that this is specifically for youth, but we know that youth are getting to the age where they begin to hear this voice of God calling them, the voice of wisdom calling them, and says, come, because what I have is worth more than rubies. But we also have another voice calling, and that's in Proverbs chapter 7. Just go back one chapter and start. We'll start reading in verse 6, and we'll read there for up to verse 23. This is the world calling now. This is the world, and he describes her also as a, it's describing wisdom as a woman. It says, she standeth in the top of the high places, by the way, in the places of the paths. She crieth at the gates. And now here we see another woman. Here, this is a completely different, a woman of a completely different character. This is a woman of the world. And it gives the picture of an unfaithful woman who is trying, calling out to those who would join her in her sinfulness. And this is what she says. I'm in the wrong place here. Chapter 7, verse 6. For at the window of my house I looked, and through my casement, and behold, among the simple ones I discerned among the youths a young man void of understanding, passing through the street near her corner, and he went the way to her house, in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. And behold, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot and subtle of heart. She is loud and stubborn, her feet abide not in her house. Now is she without, now in the streets, and lieth in wait at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him, and with an impudent face said unto him, I have peace offerings with me. This day I have paid my vows. Therefore came I forth to meet thee diligently to seek thy face, and I have found thee. I have decked my bed with coverings of tapestry, with carved works and fine linen of Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take of our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with loves, for the good man is not home. He has gone on a long journey. He has taken a bag of money with him and will come home at the day appointed. With her much fair speech, she causeth him to yield. With the flattering of her lips, she forced him. He goeth after her straightway, as an axe goeth to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till a bird strike through his liver, till a dart strike through his liver, as a bird hasteneth to the snare and knoweth not that it was for his life. So here it's talking about a man that's void of understanding that listens to this woman, and he goes to his own destruction. Youth hear these voices that are calling them. On one hand, God is calling, and the voice of wisdom is calling. On the other hand, the voice of the world is calling. Now, it's not only the youth that hear that, but those are the time when they're the most vulnerable, in a way. And youth are forced to deal with these pressures without having the advantage of a lot of personal experience. And that's why you're here. That's why the older people are here, to offer your help, your experience, and what wisdom you have gained over the years. Just a few observations here at the beginning. Youth is a necessary phase of life, and it's a beautiful phase. It's not something to rush through. I think it's a pity when parents try to rush their children through childhood. And pushing them to perform at high levels is more about making me look good as a parent than it is really for the benefit of the child, a lot of times. Children who are pushed by their parents to perform at high levels, and an approval is given to them based on that performance, even if it's spiritual, they struggle with a lot of things later in life. Because if I look at myself and I judge myself based on my performance, I will look at, and that's how they learn. That's what they learn, because their parents taught them that. Their approval is based on their performance, and even if it's spiritual performance, same concept is there. And so my worth is based on that performance, and when I learn that about myself, then that's the way I look at other people too. And so if this person is doing well, then he stands high in my book. And if he doesn't do well, then I don't think much of him. So that's not something that we're not doing our children, our youth, any favor to teach them that kind of thing. So what the point is to allow children to be children. Childhood is a phase that needs to be gone through. It can't be jumped over. Youth is the same thing. Allow youth to be youth. Understand that there's going to be some turbulence. That's part of being a youth, is some turbulence. That doesn't mean you let go of the controls and just let the plane go where it wants to go at all. But it means that there will be bumps, and that a steady hand is what is needed. Not a clenched fist, but a steady hand. A lot of years are wasted because both youth and parents can't wait for them to grow up. And so instead of, my whole point tonight is going to be, use these years of youth, childhood youth, they're good years. Make them good years. Don't just grit your teeth and hardly wait till they're over, because they can be good years, and they should be. Church leaders can't and shouldn't try to take the place of parents, except possibly in cases where there are no parents or their parents are completely disengaged. They should work alongside parents and reinforce parents, but parents should not give up their responsibilities to church leaders and expect them to do the job that they're supposed to do themselves. If we're parents, the responsibility we have for our youth doesn't lessen because they become members of the church, or because they're members of the church. Some parents blame the church and the church leaders for their bad behavior of their young people. They say the church doesn't keep them in line, and that this doesn't cut it. That's not a valid excuse. However, I'll say that some church systems and some church leaders sort of ask for that because they've assumed responsibilities that really belong to the parents. And so we have, as parents, we have responsibility for our youth, and we really can't blame anybody else. Nobody else. Youth are typically full of energy and very sociable. And in plain English, that means they love to get together and play. Or do other things, but they like to play. And they love to be together with other youth. Now, their parents have far less energy, and they just can't keep up. So sometimes parents give that responsibility to somebody else and end up practicing some neglect. And I don't think there's anything wrong. I really don't think there's anything wrong with assigning somebody to be responsible to sponsor youth activities or whatever you want to do for them, that we don't have to be there every time. But I really think probably in my case, I should be involved more rather than less with youth activities. You know, sometimes we are very careful about who's allowed to associate with our youth, but if we would be there ourselves all the time, we should welcome anybody that wants to come and be part, just like we welcome anybody to church. I think it would be ideal if we could welcome anybody that wants to come and be a part of our youth activities to actually do that, because we're there. We're with them. Things aren't going to get carried, get out of control if we're there. I hope they won't anyway. And that the youth activities, the things that our youth actually do, if somebody wants to come and participate and be a part of that, hopefully it would be for their good and not for their detriment. Now I just threw that in free. You don't have to pay for that one at all. But it's just what it seems to me. That's really not what we do. That's not really our practice. We're kind of careful about who associates with our youth. But my belief is that if, as parents, we would be much more involved with what our youth do, we could be a lot more free to say anybody is welcome to be part of that wants to be. So sometimes we have a reason, we feel like we have a reason to be concerned about a young person's spiritual condition. Sometimes we do, and how do we learn, how do we verify whether we have a reason to be concerned or not? One of those things that we can do is just simply observe. There are many things that we can learn about a person's spiritual condition simply by observation. What about his church attendance? If regular attendance is a good sign, which I think it is, then what about sporadic attendance? What is that? What does that tell us? It's true that a person can have perfect church attendance and have huge problems. It's also true that a person if a person has poor church attendance, unless there's some very valid reason, that it's likely that he will have other problems as well, more than likely. So how does he relate to authority? How does he relate to his parents? How does he relate to the church? How does he relate to his boss? How does he treat people? Yeah, we're just looking at just a way to how can we evaluate if we're concerned about a person, how do we go about evaluating his spiritual condition? How does he treat people? Is he kind? Is he selfish? Is he teachable? Or is he stubborn? So observation, just simply observing, watch. Not critically. Let's just take that critical eye right out of our, just knock it out of existence and watch with an eye of concern and an eye of love. So observe, but then ask questions. Questions are very effective tools. Jesus knew how to use questions. Questions really need to be honest and straightforward, but not designed to trap someone. Honest questions, open questions, not designed to trap, not designed that if he answers a certain way, you've got him. That's not what you're trying to do. You're not trying to trap him. You're trying to help him. And you're trying to, actually, the best questions are those when his answer, questions should be designed that to help a person see and state the truth about himself. I shouldn't have to tell this person what he is or what I see him to be. I should be able to ask questions that allows him to say it in his own words and see it for himself. So to help youth draw their own conclusions about their spiritual condition and the solution by asking open questions. Be careful who you ask. The best place to start may be with the parents if you have a question, if you have a concern, might be. But then again, do this carefully. Recognize, understanding that when you go to parents with questions, it can really easily sound like criticism or some kind of condemnation. And just make sure, because if a parent is dealing with an issue with his young person, he may be kind of sensitive. He may be really burdened about it and very concerned about it. He may have already heard criticism. And if you come, make sure that you don't come with a critical spirit, but come with a concern. Maybe the best place is not to start with parents. Maybe the best place is to start with the person himself. We just have to be very careful that this doesn't degenerate into some kind of gossip. We need to be careful about that. Don't hide from the truth. When there's smoke, there's usually some kind of fire. You know, it's not always when... In Belize, they have a little saying that says... I don't know. I'll say it like they say it, and see if it makes any sense to you. When we're talking about hearing things about someone, there's a saying that says, "If dano soda nearly so." And I don't know. Does that make any sense to you? Probably not. But it's saying like, if it isn't true, it's almost true. So what he's simply saying is that when there's smoke, there might be some fire. Likely to be some fire. If you're hearing a lot of things about somebody. Maybe it's not completely true, but it's, maybe there's something to it. Often it is. So if there's someone that there's this, these little things keep coming around, as parents, if we hear keep these little things keep coming around about one of our young people, maybe it's not completely true, but maybe there's something to it. Often it is, and we shouldn't hide from that. We shouldn't let fear or false love get in the way of doing the things that need to be done. And it's not only important that you know the truth about the condition, the spiritual conditions, it's important. It's even more important what you do with that knowledge. What should you do? If you're a parent, your responsibilities may be a little bit different. Well, they are a little bit different than if you're just another concerned person. But when you know someone is struggling spiritually, it's always right to pray, no matter how much you know or how little you know. It's always right to pray. And in the busy lifestyle that all of us experience, almost all of us at least, if we're anywhere close to middle age, that taking the time to pray meaningfully and effectively is challenging, to say the least, because you can't do that very well on the run. It takes time, and to do that effectively is challenging, but it's never been more important than it is today. So pray. And then approach. If it gets to that point, we take that next step of approaching that person. Paul says in Philippians chapter 2, he says in Philippians 2 that we should esteem each other better than ourselves. What about when we go with a concern to someone, and this doesn't only apply to youth, but what about if we would just go with that attitude, that humble attitude of esteeming that person better than us, even when we're bringing correction or bringing some kind of concern. We go with that attitude. That is a hard attitude to resist. You know, sometimes we run into really some hard cases where people are just resistant, but we run into that far less if we go humbly. Mm-hmm. Okay, and again, just don't gossip. Don't talk about these things, these problems, just to talk about them. Youth is a turbulent stage of life. It has many updrafts and downdrafts, but it's an important stage that shouldn't be rushed through. It shouldn't be leaped over, or you shouldn't try to rush through it or try to leap over it. It's an important question. So in the words of Paul, whatsoever you do in word or deed, do all to the glory of God. So whatsoever we do in word or deed, do all for the good of the youth that are under that you have responsibility to. Now let's go to the book, the last verses in the Old Testament. It's Malachi 4, verses 5 and 6. He says, "Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord, and he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, and the heart of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse." What we cannot fail to see from this is that even back in the days of Elijah, or of Malachi, I mean to say, there's always been that, even back then, there's always been what is sometimes called a generation gap, where there's a distance between the older generations and the younger generation. Now, what causes this? Some of those differences some of this difference is normal and natural and is perfectly okay. For example, different interests that we have because of different stages of life. If you're middle-aged, your body clock is at 12 o'clock noon, more or less, and your life is half over. A youth, a young person, his body clock is at like 6 a.m., Now at 12 o'clock at noon, you'd like lunch, and at 6 o'clock in the morning, he wants his breakfast. And there's nothing wrong with that. What I'm simply saying is that on a daily basis, at 6 o'clock, we're not really into lunch, we're into breakfast. At 12 o'clock, we're into lunch. We're at different life stages. We have different interests and in some ways different values, and that's pretty normal, and there's nothing wrong with it. Speaking of different values, young people typically value friends and their opinions very much and take their family somewhat for granted. Isn't that kind of true? I think it's true. Young people really value their friends. Their family, they kind of take for granted. But you know, in the middle age, the thing almost switches, where our family becomes very important. We work and our whole lives revolve around our family, and we tend to take our friends for granted a little bit. It's not that we don't appreciate them, we certainly do, but we certainly don't think about them nearly as much, and they're just there, and they help. Until we really get into desperate situations sometimes where we really need them, they're just there. We just sort of take them for granted. Now, this can get pretty turbulent because youth can get obsessed with their friends and their opinions. And some of the things where sometimes what shows up is where they can get obsessed with what they wear because of what their friends think or might say. And so as parents, again, a steady and firm hand is pretty necessary there. Young people typically love adventure and a rush of adrenaline. middle-aged people are typically too busy for that, and old people are likely to break if they get too involved in that kind of stuff. But one of the things that's very beautiful, I think, is when you have families that are together doing all those things, not all at once maybe, but middle-aged people, the parents do get involved with some of the adventurous stuff that the young people are like. Maybe a little bit on the sidelines, maybe not pell-mell down the hill, but at least they're showing an interest in it. And in that way, and then of course the young people get interested in the production that the parents are more likely interested in. Adventuring and working. The thrill that the youngsters enjoy and the productivity that the parents enjoy. Youth is very interesting, and it is a sometimes contradictory time of life, a unique time of life. You'll never be in another time of life that's quite like youth. I think when you get old, I don't think you go back into youth. You go back more into like childhood, but not quite in that same. That's a unique once in a lifetime experience to be in that youth. And so again, if you're there, enjoy it. And if you have someone that you're responsible that's there, we should enjoy that too, because it's a once in a lifetime. So, but it's kind of contradictory sometimes. I mean, it's a little bit confusing. A young person can be very reluctant to expend energy in the garden or doing dishes, but has boundless energy when it's time to play volleyball. We can rush right away from being so tired, and they can go play volleyball or lift weights or anything like that. That lots of energy for that. When this becomes problematic is when the communications breaks down and respects breaks down and understanding breaks down and tensions rise up and suspicions rise up. It's not a problem that young people have different values in a sense. So some things are much more important to them than they are to me. That's really not a problem until tensions build up because of it. And communications break down, and usually the tensions build up because the communications break down, and respect breaks down. That's when it becomes a problem. So thinking of the generation gap, who's responsible for it? Whose fault is it mostly? This generation gap partly is just because we're at different stages of life, but partly is because we're not talking to each other, we're not understanding each other, we're not communicating. So whose fault is that? I would like to say that I think it's mostly the older generation's fault, more than the younger. And this is why I say so. The younger generation has never been where we are. We have been where they are. If we don't understand what they're going through, whose fault is that? They can't understand where we're at nearly as well as we should be able to understand where they are. And so let's think about that. Now, we tend to hit them on the head with that fact, that I know I've been where you are, you've never been where I am. We use it like a club, but it shouldn't be that way. It should be something different. It should be a way of understanding rather than the way we often use it. The intent should be to guide them through. Sometimes we act as if we want them to just jump over youth. We didn't. We struggled through it, but sometimes we wish that they would just get over it. But we shouldn't think of it that way. We should be there to guide them through it. You know that if you're going to shed light on a situation, if you're traveling with someone and it's dark and you only you have a light, if you're way ahead of him and you shine that light back in his eyes and hope that he's going to get some good out of it, it's not going to help him much. You can do a lot more good with your light if you go back where he is and shine it. And I think it's a lot like that with our youth. If we want to really do them some good, let's go where they are and shine some light and be with them and walk forward with them and guide them through. It's a little bit like a boat that we want to steer, It's really, really hard to steer a ship if you're not on board. It's just pretty difficult. But if we're with them, we can exercise some influence and exercise some direction there. So we all go through a different stage of life, and it's been my observation that we struggle the most in our relationships with those who are in the stage right next to us. For example, we had a youth living with us when we were young married. We had just a couple of young children, and we had a VS boy living with us. We were on the mission field, and this guy didn't seem to understand children very well. He struggled with them. He seemed to expect that he seemed to really not understand that they were children and they behaved like children. And we got impatient with him. We struggled with him, honestly, because he didn't understand our children. Later, it occurred to me that his parents more than likely struggled with us because we didn't understand. We expected more out of him than we should have probably. He was a youth. And we were really kind of got mad at him sometimes because he just couldn't understand our children, not realizing that we were in the same situation, that we were doing the same thing he was doing. So often it's that way. I think the people that sometimes struggle with youth and to understand the things that the struggles that youth go through are the hardest. I think maybe the middle-aged people are the most impatient with them. People that have children but don't have youth yet themselves. I think that's when we struggle the hardest with understanding this stage. So how can we get through all this, and how can we connect with young people? Treat them as adults. Don't baby them. Don't patronize them or treat them with apparent kindness that betrays a feeling of superiority. God entrusted some of his most important work to people that were still very young. David was very likely still a teenager when God instructed Samuel to anoint him king of Israel. And David behaved with a level of maturity and restraint found in few people of any age. And then we have Mary. Very important work of bringing the Savior into the world was given to a very young girl, more than likely in the early teens. The Bible doesn't say that, but according to culture of those days, it more than likely she was in her early teens. And then Samuel, you know how young he was when God began to speak to him. So treat them like adults. Treat them as adults. They are adults. At the same time, remember that they're young adults. There's nothing wrong with their intellect. There's nothing wrong with their ability to think and reason. But they lack experience. And nothing but time will give them that. Give them time. So don't have expectations that are unrealistic. But treating them as adults means holding them accountable. That doesn't mean that there's no accountability. They need to be accountable. That's how you treat an adult. You hold them accountable. I'm over 50, but I'm still a baby in the aviation world, and I wouldn't like it very much if experienced pilots would just make me feel like a baby ever said because I haven't had much experience. It's not really my fault that I haven't had a lot of experience. I'm just learning. I'm just starting. It's even less a young person's fault that he lacks experience. Now, if you work with young people and you use yourself as an example, and sometimes that can be helpful, but make sure that you're not always the hero in the story. It usually works better if you tell them the time you did something really stupid. That usually helps more than if you tell them about the time you really did the right thing. If you're going to tell about somebody that did the right thing, use somebody else. So treat them as adults. Respect them. Respect them for their knowledge. We better recognize that in today's world, there are many things that they likely know way more about than we do. More than likely, they know way more about some things than we do. So respect them for their knowledge. Respect them for those things that they know. Respect their questions. Sometimes you won't be able to answer because you don't know. And if you don't know, say so. even spiritual questions, even questions about why we do what we do, why we have the practices that we have. If you don't know, say so. I don't know. It's a lot better than saying, it's because, and then make it up something that sounds kind of fishy, because young people can see right through that. And so just say, I don't know. It's a lot better not to know than to make up something or defend something that really you know in your heart can't really be defended. Respect their opinions. That doesn't mean agree with them. Young people can have crazy opinions, can be crazily opinionated about some things that don't matter at all. But it's their opinion. They'll get over it, probably. If it really is a... You can respect that opinion. You don't have to agree with it, but it's their opinion. Respect it. Respect their person. Respect them as a person. They are individuals. Don't compare them negatively with others in their family, their father, their brothers, their sisters, their mother, or whatever. My dad was a talker. He could tell story after story and joke after joke, and he never forgot any of them. And I always kind of enjoyed, we've been away from a home, or been away from his community for years, and so when I would go back, I'm forgetful. So he would tell the same story that he told me 6 times probably, and I often didn't remember, and I would laugh every time at the joke because I didn't remember, and my siblings would be there, and they'd say, this is an old story. But and then he worked at prison. He went to prison all the time, and the prisoners liked his stories, and they liked his jokes, and then sometimes he would ask us to speak there, and you could tell that their expectation was that this is a son, he'll probably be the same way, and it's not the same. And so it puts like pressure. I felt pressured, but it's not. Let's not do that. Let's not make negative comparisons with brothers, sisters, fathers, or whatever, with somebody else. Listen to them. So we're talking about treating them as adults and respecting them and listening to them. Listen to their dreams. Develop a real interest in the things that they love, especially for young people that you're close, your own young people, and young people that you're close to. Develop a real interest in the things that they love. It might be their work, it might be a hobby, it might be something that we're not even very comfortable with, like technology. That's stretching a lot of us, my age and older, to this whole technology thing. But for young people, it's just part of their life. And it's a challenge for us to be able to be conversant in that language a little bit and know something about it. It might be something like technology, or it might be something like art or music or horses. It might be John Deere tractors or Holstein cows or a shop-bought CNC machine. Or it could be a lot of different things, but whatever they're interested, listen to it. And develop some interest in that. Let them tell you about it and be interested. Allow them to speak to you honestly and confess things to you if they feel like it without expressing shock at what they've confessed. Never say, how could you think like that? Or how could you ever do that? Don't you know? You know, if you say things like that, that's probably the last time they'll come to you. You've certainly made a mess of this. Well, they know. That's why they came and told you about it. And so what we want to do is look for a way out. Not so much beat them on the head for getting in there, but look for a way out. Understand them. Recognize their limitations. Did you ever ask yourself why young people do some crazy things and take so many chances? Young people take a lot of chances. You would think sometimes that they think they can't die because of the things they do. And some really impulsive things. And part of the reason is literally physical. Part of the reason is that the part of our brain that connects actions with possible consequences develops late. It develops, usually fully developed between 23, 25, in the 20s somewhere. So that is scientifically why young people do some impulsive things sometimes without thinking, apparently without thinking, because physically that just doesn't make that connection that if I do this, this might happen. We don't know how, action-consequence connection is not fully developed there. So understand them. Understand that they're in a time of life with lots of turbulence, lots of bumps. Strong feelings can push them one way and another. Sometimes confusion. So understand them. And when you talk to them, be yourself. Just be you. Talk to them about ordinary things, not always spiritual things. If every time you come, this person knows that he's going to be quizzed, he's going to be questioned, he's going to be, the only conversation that we have is about his spiritual life, he's probably not going to be a very, you probably won't learn as much about his spiritual life than you will if you have plenty of ordinary conversation and move into that. You'll open up much more. You'll be surprised about that. I don't know how you feel about your responsibility with the youth, but I know how you should feel. It's a great privilege to be able to speak into their lives at such a formative age. It's a solemn responsibility to assure that our influence is a good one. And the key to eliminating this breakdown in communication and this generation gap that we're talking about that causes the negative effects of this generation gap is to keeping it from happening in the first place. And that begins with parents. Youth who have a good communication with their parents have a much easier time communicating with other authorities. But church leaders can have a lot to do, can begin that process or other, not only church leaders, but other older people in the church or middle-aged people in the church can begin that communication by developing relationships with children, with other people's children. Not only our children are important, other people's children are important. And we round ourselves and our families out much more when we have relationships with other families and other people's children as well. So, in conclusion, as older persons, middle-aged or older, we have been where the youth are. They have not been where we are. And let's use that advantage that we have. Not to, again, so many times when we mention that, we use it in a way of like we're superior in some way. That's not it. That's not the idea. And that's not the thing we should get across, bring across to them. But using the knowledge that we have because we've been there, walk beside them and guide them. If we're going to shed light, again, if we're going to shed light on a situation, we need to be with them. So may the Lord help us as we recognize the responsibility and the privilege that we have, and may He give us the wisdom to carry those things out. I'm going to, and I'm sorry for dropping this on you quickly, Brother Matt, but I'm going to ask the song leader to lead us in a song here in closing, if you have one ready, and then I'm going to turn the time over to the ministers to close the service this evening. May the Lord bless you.